a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Dave and Dejanovic.
All right, here we go.
A new conversation on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Well, it was 3.5 years ago, December 2015, that 13-month-old Penny Mae Cormani died. Dave, she ate enough heroin to kill an adult man, a grown man. So mom and dad were sentenced to 5 years. Now they want parole.
And my initial reaction is never. Like, no parole, not ever, lock him away. And then you start diving into it a little deeper. How much is enough heroin to kill a grown man? It's nothing, Deb. It's a sugar packet. It's for a baby. You know, if it's lying around and the parents are addicted, which they clearly were, and drug users, drugs being around and it's accessible, is that a life in prison kind of crime?
You know, after reading the article that was posted on KSL.com, it really got me thinking this morning, Dave. Would I grant them parole? Yes, it's early. Yes, most people are paroled early. They don't serve their entire sentence. We let them back out into the world to see if they can try their hand at fixing their life and being a better person. But then I thought, it's a baby. And that baby had no other chance in life but for that her parents would keep her safe. And that's where I think, oh, maybe they need to serve the entire time. It's a baby. Can we forgive early and release them early when a 13-month-old did something that a lot of kids do, put something in their mouth, but it's poisoning. It poisoned her.
Yes. And Debbie, how often does this happen where kids ingest something in a home that is poisonous, that's not heroin, that's not an illegal drug? I mean, kids get into over-the-counter pills. My brother, when he was a baby, my mom tells this story, there was some gas that spilled, and he started lapping it up like a dog.
Like gasoline?
Gasoline. And then it starts burning his mouth, aww, and it was awful. But the problem with little kids is they don't know. And then you turn your back for a second, and they're into something. I tell you, I remember the time when, and this was horrifying, my son Jacob, he was crawling everywhere. All my other kids were amazing. You said no to them, and they were fine. Jacob was like, I want to get in all the trouble. And one day, we hear him get into the kitchen, and then we hear the garbage disposal turned on. He had flipped it on, and he was playing around in the sink with a running garbage disposal.
Where were the parents? Where were the parents?
In the very next room. We were literally in the very next room, and all of a sudden, we're like, where's Jacob? And then we hear the garbage disposal, and we about run through the wall to get to him, to grab him out of the sink. And it's because kids are a disaster. They
but
get into things.
Aren't some of these moments less egregious than others? Is it less egregious that you allowed your child out of your sight for long enough that he was able to crawl up onto the counter and start the garbage disposal than their baby ate heroin and died? because they had to have been committing a crime in the first place for that to happen. So let me dive into more of the details. And by the way, if you're just hopping in the car, welcome to the Dave and Dejanovic Show. We're talking about a couple, a mom and dad, who are in prison. They're asking for parole from the Utah Parole Board. Their baby died in 2015, 13-month-old Penny, after eating enough heroin that could have killed a man. Let me tell you a few more details and see if you change your mind about the question that I've asked, which is, should they be granted parole? Some friends agreed to let them stay at their house in exchange for heroin. And then, according to the article I read on KSL.com, they found little Penny unconscious in her crib, Dave, and then delayed calling 911. That boggles my mind as a mommy.
That's terrifying.
I was calling 911 just for anything.
Yeah, which explains why they're in prison. This wasn't neglect. This was more than just neglect. This was more than, hey, where's so-and-so? And then you're tracking them down because they slipped away. This shows to me a level of neglect that is far greater than just, oh, we lost track of them for a minute and they got into something.
Isn't it this type of lifestyle? Don't you wake up once you have a baby?
No. I mean, that
the heroin is so gripping and so addicting that it becomes before your child.
Yeah. And it's not just, and it's just not heroin. And it's alcohol, it's methamphetamine, it's so many drugs that are just so addictive.
In fact, you were looking up some articles about this, and you were intrigued me with what you found.
Yeah, and this is something that my family has experienced firsthand in this sense. My dad worked in alcohol and drug treatment for 25 years. The fact is, the results when it comes to sobriety, relapse, they're awful. So often we say, oh, they completed rehab, and we give the thumbs up and we're excited. But completion and relapse, totally different. You can finish, and I had many kids because I worked at this same center. I had many kids that went through the program. They completed rehab, and then the very next day, boom, they get arrested because they relapsed. Very common. Maybe I would say 10%, 20% actually make it even through the first year, Deb. The relapse, drugs, that's how powerful the hold is on these kids.
So their case, we're talking about the parents who want parole from the Utah Parole Board, after their baby died from a heroin overdose. She got it in her mouth, she ate it, and she died. Their addiction, you know, was certainly obviously out of control, but they say they're remorseful. They say they've moved past their addictions. But here's other thing I read in the KSL.com article was the mom's been kicked out of her treatment program 4 times in prison. Now, Dad's had no disciplinary write-ups while he's been in prison, and he's gotten his high school degree. He's completed treatment classes. They're now separated, according to the article. So does Mom stay behind bars and Dad get to walk? We want to talk more about heroin as an addiction. You got the story about the Utah baby who ate heroin and died. Dave and I knee-deep in a pre-show discussion about drug addiction as a disease. Some insist it is, others say it's not, and quite frankly, I'm confused about it.
Dave and Dejanovic. Talk all day. Dave and Debbie at 9.
In the heat, I'm slowing down.
Are we being babies about
it? Lloyd Matheson at 12:30.
Even if you run, what is going to make that worth it?
On KSL News Radio.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Dave and Dujanovic.
The heroin-addicted parents that were so negligent that their baby ingested so much heroin that it killed her. Now they want parole. The question we want to know is, drug addiction a disease or a lifestyle at that point?
Well, Debbie, that's a great question, and we want to hear from you, 57500. Send us your text or give us a call, 801-575-7668. This is a question, Deb, and I think it's a term that we need to really examine, because when I hear that addiction is a disease, it does make me feel like, well, there's nothing we can do about it. Though we do know that in order to overcome it, that the person that is addicted can do something about it. They can fight it and they can overcome it. And we've seen stories like this. So I think that is a good conversation. And there's been a few stories pop up recently. And I want to play a little soundbite from a neuroscientist talking about whether addiction is a disease or not.
I mean, no one is saying that addiction is not serious, that it isn't destructive, and clearly it disrupts people's lives, and it can often really wreck lives. But the medicalization, the diseasing of addiction leads to, first of all, psychiatry kind of works in a colonial way. It takes over territory, and it says, well, okay, addiction is a disease, and therefore the way to treat it is by having medically-based rehabs. And, of course, the development of certain drugs is really important, and addicts need to follow a medical regimen and do what they're told, basically. And the learning model of addiction is different. It says, no, actually, addicts need to have a more powerful sense of their own perspective. They need to develop effort and willpower and self-control. They need to be helped to hold on to different goals and to maintain their commitment to those goals. It's entirely different from a medical approach to the problem.
The problem with rehab is the cost. You can't afford it. It's tens of thousands of dollars because people relapse. So a lot of families can't afford it. And that's why I've always felt as though with a lot of things, a lot of this is, an internal battle to overcome the addiction. But I have just been so confused over the years as we started to refer to addiction as a disease and drug addiction in particular, that I just don't know which way I go on this.
Well, and this is a very, very difficult conversation and a difficult topic, because we don't want to come across as uncaring or thinking, hey, if you just toughen up and make good life decisions. I know it's more nuanced than that. I know it's more difficult than that. But when we call addiction a disease, when I think of a disease, and this is what this neuroscientist Mark Lewis was addressing, when we talk about something being a disease, that means there is a medical approach to it. Meaning, I can give you medicine to help cure that disease. When we talk about cancer, how is it cured? Well, not through choices. It's through medicine. It's through chemotherapy or radiation or a number of different treatments. So when we call addiction a disease, really, and again, my family has been, has worked for years in alcohol and drug rehabilitation. The way you get out of addiction is through your choices. Now, is there a withdrawal? Yes. Are there some drugs that will help mask or ease some of these withdrawal symptoms? No question. But ultimately, the goal is to be drug-free, is to be alcohol-free, and that ultimately comes down to choices. That's why I think it's difficult to call addiction a disease, because the way you treat a disease is totally different than addiction to drugs and alcohol.
All the years I was covering stories for KSL television on the streets with narcotics officers, making arrests, drug dealers and drug users, I always ask the question, why is heroin so addictive? They would say, don't try it once. You'll just fall into the evil grips of the drug. I mean, heroin is so addictive. So I looked up a little bit of information because I wanted to sort of answer that question for myself. It's opium is nearly identically chemically to endorphins, and that's the stuff that makes you feel good when you exercise. So all these years you tell your kids, you know, don't do drugs, they're bad for you, and it turns out they make people feel good. And that's the ironic and scary twist in all of this. It does not require exercise to release it, so you don't have to go run on the treadmill. And it just is so quick. It just sucks you in, Dave.
Well, if you just compared heroin to running on the treadmill, don't worry, I will never experiment because I have no interest. It's crazy, Debbie.
It just releases automatically.
Yeah, and in massive quantities and doses, and that is this incredible high. I came across this fascinating story, and I'd never heard this story before, and it was talking about the addiction or how addictive heroin is, and it went back to the Vietnam War, and so many of our servicemen were addicted to heroin or had at least tried heroin. And President Nixon said, you know what? If you test positive for heroin, you don't get to come home. He called it Operation Golden Flow. So they had to take a urine test before they got on the plane. And if they were positive, then they had to stay in Vietnam, go through rehab, and then once they were clean, they could come home. The numbers were staggering of people that had taken heroin or were addicted. When they returned home, Debbie, almost 80% never had another issue with heroin. They kicked the habit.
Because they were threatened with non-reentry.
Yes, exactly.
Not being able to get back to the homeland.
And this was one of those... Yeah. And they wanted to leave desperately, but leaving that environment, coming to a completely different environment where the access was not there, where the lifestyle was completely different. This was really one of those moments where we start looking at heroin as, okay, despite the fact that it's incredibly addictive and that we say that you try it once and you're addicted forever. Well, the fact is, when we saw this in Vietnam, that through choice, they could decide, you know what, I'm not going to use any longer. And they were incredibly successful, not chemically, but by just choice.
So we're talking about this because their Utah parents are asking for parole. Their 13-month-old baby girl died about 3.5 years ago after she ate heroin. They were addicted. And now they want out of prison. And I asked the question this morning in my own head as I was getting ready for work and I saw this article. I asked myself, would I parole them or would I want to keep them behind bars longer? We're taking your phone calls, 801-575-7668.
I say no parole. They were directly responsible for that baby's death. They're also directly responsible for that baby's welfare being parents. They're directly responsible for the murder of that child. They should do every single thing. Minute of sentence time, in my opinion.
When it comes to children, and I've covered so many news stories where children have died at the hands of their parents, there is nothing more disgusting than that. And there are no stories that have lived longer in my soul than those stories. And I can think, I see their faces in my head, and I see... quite frankly, Dave, the moments when officers bring the little babies out of these homes over and over and over again. And I have a hard time with the idea of forgiveness in these cases. And I know a lot of people don't serve their whole time, but in certain cases, it does feel make us feel better to keep them locked up.
Does this feel different if that child had passed away from something not drug related? If it wasn't an illegal drug? If they'd gotten into some sort of a cleaner or they'd gotten into something that was an everyday household item.
Certainly, when parents aren't engaged in illegal activity and their kids die, and that's a much different story than when they bring drugs home and they leave them around for kids to ingest. We're also getting a lot of texts on the Utah Community Credit Union text line. One of our listeners here, Dave, says they totally liked your take on it, that addiction is a mental disease. And one other listener says, no, it's not. It's a choice. Addiction is a choice. And you can choose to continue to use heroin or you can choose to break the habit.
And that doesn't mean it's easy. It's incredibly difficult. And the physical withdrawals are brutal. If you've ever seen anyone going through withdrawal, it is heartbreaking because the physical pain is so acute and intense. And the fact is, you just have to let them go through it. But physical withdrawal is not a year-long process. It's not even a month or week-long process. It can be a few days. Now, is it intense and awful? No question. But the way you get sober is really through you deciding that I'm not going to use anymore. And that is a daily battle. It's a daily fight. Every time you wake up, you say, you know what? Today, I'm not using. The ones that can do that, they're the ones that win.
Live breaking news now on the mobile app for KSL News Radio. Listen at home or anywhere you go. Brought to you by Any Hour Services. KSL FM Midvale. KSL Salt Lake City. KSL News Radio. This is Utah's news station.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now, too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.